Well, welcome back, everybody. We hope the refreshments were good. Please let us know at the evaluation. We can always work on the catering, as we always do. In the past, over the past 10 weeks, the idea of something called Saturday Night Live has changed very much from what maybe I remember it as a young man. Saturday Night Live in the last 10 weeks has been, let's see Rabbi Glatz, what he has to say on his Saturday night posting. It's a real pleasure and an honor to have you return back. Rabbi Glatz has been with our conference for so many of the years over the past 12. It's always a pleasure to get together over Shabbos with the families and get to know you. Once again, we turn to your expertise. This is your baby, infectious disease and everything about it. You've been the spokesperson. You've been the name. You've been the face of the coronavirus. I don't know if that's something that we want it. You may want, but nonetheless, not just in the Jewish community, not just amongst the community, but much more the community at large, the Infectious Disease Society. Really, it's a pleasure and an honor to welcome, a Rav, a Posek, and at the same time, someone who is in such high stature in the community in North America and beyond. Rabbi Glatz, some of you know, is an associate rabbi at Congregation Anshei Chesed. He's an assistant rabbi at Young Israel of Woodmere. He is a chairman of of medicine and the hospital epidemiologist at South Nassau Nassau Communities Hospital, clinical professor at Mount Sinai. I see here also an adjunct professor of Jewish medical ethics at Landers. Many of you know that he has been giving Daf Yomi for about 25 years, and I am sure some of you tap into the OU Dirshu Mishneh Brura Shir. He is also the author of several books put out by Art Scroll, and like many of our speakers, also a prolific author. But without a doubt, at the end of the day, especially in the past 2 months, Rabbi Glatz has brought a lot of wisdom to this very, very difficult subject, and he will walk us through the next phase, which we are all eagerly looking forward to about the vaccine. But there are some questions that will come up both ethically, halachically, and those need to be dealt with appropriately. So without further ado, Rabbi Glatz.
So thank you very, very much, Laser. It's an honor and a pleasure to always be here with your wonderful program. Thank you for your very kind introduction. It's a tremendous honor to follow Rabbi Dr. Steinberg, who is the real guru in the field of Jewish medical ethics and halacha. I've learned so much from him, from his farm. So it's a tremendous honor to be on the same panel with him this morning. I looked at some of the Zoom people that are on to see old friends and wish them all a hello. It's nice to see each other even in this type of a setting. I wanted to start off with an interesting idea we just had in the previous parsha that we had learned when we learned about the connection between Shemitah and Har Sinai. So there's a famous Vart Rashi brings down, Mainin Shmita Etzel Har Sinai. What's this? This is a vernacular expression in secular the world. I once listened to a radio in Israel hearing two talking heads discussing something, and one of them, both secular, said to the other, you're saying a non sequitur. Mainin Shmita Har Sinai. So what's the connection between Shmita and Har Sinai? It's a secular expression. But I think there's a very important lesson for us to learn. And that is, Rashi brings down that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This coronavirus, this novel coronavirus, COVID-19, is brought by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As Roy Steinberg just mentioned, we don't know why it's brought. HaKadosh Baruch Hu clearly was unhappy with something that we're doing. But we have to understand that everything that's involved with this coronavirus is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's given us the tools to potentially do something about it. But we have to do it in a halachically acceptable way. It's not sufficient for us to go and do what our own personal ethics and mores tell us we can do, but we have to follow what the halacha says we're allowed to do. And we know that there's been tremendous situations of horrible science over the years, starting from the Nazis, Yimach Shemam Zichram, and they experimented on people in the most cruel and horrible ways for the, quote, good of science and trying to develop things for mankind. We know subsequent to that, there have been numerous studies that were done unethically, putting people that were unable to protest or didn't have the mental or physical capabilities to protest, and medications and treatments were given to them, or just watching natural history. So there are laws developed in the secular world. There are IRBs, internal review boards, to make sure that any research that's done is done in an acceptable way from a secular fashion. So we have to remember, we have a higher code of law that we have to answer to, and that anything that we do must be done within the framework of halacha. What sounds like it's a good idea could be a horrible idea in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore we need to follow our poskim, we need to follow the Shulchan Aruch, we need to follow what rabbinic guidance tells us is an acceptable way to conduct studies, an acceptable way to experiment on both animals and on human beings. And this will be the talk that I'm going to give today, which really deals with not only vaccines, but new treatments. I want to say one last word from the Aruch Hayim HaKadosh, when he says this connection between Shemitah and HaSinai. So the Pasuk actually says twice, a lashon of Vayedaber. It says Vayedaber, and then it says Daber. So why this double lashon? So I think this is really an opportunity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us over here. He's telling us, I've given you this horrible machala, and yes, it's going to affect you. You have to understand that it's going to, in fact, make a terrible roshim on life. But it's also a tremendous opportunity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us to make a roshim on Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And that's what the Aruch Hayim HaKadosh says. You're dealing over here with a Bein Adam L'Chaveiro opportunity, as well as Bein Adam L'Makom. There are certain rules, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, these are the dinim. This is now the state of the art. Can you daven with a minyan? Can you have a kvura the way we normally do it? Can you have a bris the way we normally do it? That's Bein Adam L'Makom. But there's also the aspect of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And the one thing that I think that we have tremendously gotten a benefit from COVID. It's hard to use that term. We've gotten a benefit from COVID in terms of an increased sense of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. The amount of chesed, the amount of tremendous reaching out as people are in isolation, the tremendous reaching out that we can do to make sure that nobody is truly isolated, even though they're physically isolated, to make sure that people have food, people have access, who are scared to go out, they have access to all the things that they need, to make sure that nobody is truly alone and unlooked after. The amount of chesed that healthcare workers have done, putting themselves at risk. The amount of volunteers, hatzalah people, first responders, they put themselves at risk to do chesed bein adam l'chaveiro. Maybe that's the true message over here of COVID-19. Everybody looks at the negatives. So maybe we should be looking at the positives. The amount of unbelievable chesed that has come about because of COVID-19, maybe that would be the hascholas hagu'ula, because we know that the world will be rebuilt with chesed. Olam chesed yibone. And maybe, this is the haschala of the geula. The month of Sivan, renewing Chodesh Tov to everybody. We renew our commitment to the Torah. We renew our Kabbalah Satorah in a few days. So Be'ezus Hashem on Shavuos, it should be our Kabbalah Satorah. And just like the original Kabbalah Satorah was supposed to lead us into Eretz Yisrael and to the fulfillment of bringing Moshe Rabbeinu as Mashiach Tzidkenu, which unfortunately didn't work out. So maybe this time on this Shavuos, our new recommitment to Kabbalah Satorah with the commitment of Chesed that we've shown, maybe Emir Tzashem, that would be the best cure. And then we won't have to give talks about whether the vaccines will work or not, because we won't be suffering from all of these machlos. At the same time, it's my opportunity to wish Nechama to Rachel Turetsky. She should live and be well and find Nechama. We just had the pleasure during COVID, at the start of COVID in February, to be at a conference with them. And Arthur, Oliver Shalom, Aaron Scholl, was a very, very special person. And Aaron Scholl is somebody that we will miss tremendously. There's a biography that, a little commemorative tribute to him that you can see on the JME website. Please go and read it, because he was a very special person. I remember sitting down with him. We sat next to each other. I gave a lecture on COVID at this conference. It's so sad. And Margie and I have such fond memories of both Arthur and Rachel sitting together and talking at the various conferences we've attended over the years. Besides being a Talmud Chacham on his own right, as well as being a wonderful pulmonologist, much more importantly, he was a wonderful person. And he will be tremendously missed. And Yibalim L'chaim L'chaim to Rachel and the whole family, they should, Mirtz Hashem, have a nechama, knowing that all these shiurim are being done in his honor, and that Be'ezus Hashem, this should be a huge aliyah for his holy neshama. Yehi zichro baruch. So now I'll begin and talk about some of the medical background. You can't have a paskin shaila unless you understand the medical background. So we have to understand how serious this COVID-19 virus really is. Besides the hundreds of thousands of people that have already died, nebuch, in the world because of this, we have to understand that the potential for disaster coming back at any moment is there. I get very, very nervous when people say, we're out of the woods right now. There were major epicenters in New York City, in Long Island, in other parts of the United States. The major epicenters, of course, in Asia and in Europe. Baruch Hashem, Eretz Yisrael, while having, unfortunately, way too many deaths, wasn't really an epicenter of horrific deaths and tragedy, although any one death is way too much. But we have to understand that no place is out of this yet. And therefore, it's extremely important from a halacha l'maisa basis that everybody has to understand that you must still practice all of the things that Chazal said that we have to practice in order to make ourselves continue to stay safe. People cannot be lax with this. There are people walking around thinking that they're supermen, that they have antibody, that they have protection because they had illness. Maybe or maybe not true. But certainly from a halacha l'maisa aspect, we must still conduct ourselves as if there is a very serious magefa in our midst, and we can't in any way let up. And that's why when we ask Shilohs about medications, can we take certain medications? Can we take certain vaccines? Would they be permissible in halach l'maisa basis? That's assuming, that's a given that everybody is doing everything else that they're mechuyev to do in order to prevent further spread of the illness. And as in New York, the governor just opened up this week to allow minyanim, at least from a government point of view, a gathering of 10 people or less. It's always interesting that they bedavka picked the number 10. It's not through coincidence. But a gathering of 10 people is allowed, albeit it still is a certain risk. So I've asked around to see what people are doing in different communities, in different places. And the one thing that every posek agrees upon, I've had the zchus to speak to kamat all the poskim in recent time about this, and the one thing that is absolutely agreed upon by all the poskim is that you're obligated to go and do everything you can to prevent further spread. And I was so disappointed and saddened to hear last night and early this morning from different places that have, quote, opened up, how in some places it's unfortunately back to business as usual. And that we can have a shul shalish shodis. How can any shul right now have a shul shalish shodis together with people in a small, cramped, based medrash, or in a small shtiebel type situation? Have people packed next to each other? You're eating shalish shodis, obviously not wearing a mask. There's nobody checking to see that everybody in the room truly has zero symptoms. We're relying upon the honor system, which Nebuch, I have personally seen, is worthless. People are so driven by their Yetzer Tov to go to shul, they don't realize it's their Yetzer Hara. The Gemara tells us that sometimes the Yetzer Hara comes to you in a long beard and a strammel, comes to you with all the good intentions, and you're thinking it's the Yetzer Tov, but it's the Yetzer Hara. The zeal and desire to have a shalish shudis together in shul is a tremendous mitzvah. The mitzvah shalish shudis, we're not chas v'sholom negating that. We're not saying you shouldn't do the mitzvah shalish shudis, but you have to do it in a proper way. For a person to go to shul right now in an area where COVID still exists and say, shluchai mitzvah ein nizokin, is sheker. It's absolutely incorrect. I heard this myself from the Novominska, Zechet Tzadet V'Kodesh Levracha, Zatzal. So difficult to say, Zatzal. I spoke with him 2 weeks before Nebuch his Patira, and presented to him some of the medical information that was available at that time. And the Novominska Zatzal said, you cannot apply the principle of the Torah being Megan, of mitzvahs being Megan. The Torah and the mitzvahs will protect you. You can't apply that when there's a sishchicha hazeka, when it's common, it's likely that damage will occur. And he says, this is pikuach nefashos. And how can people do this? The desire to do well, it's coming from here, the Yetzer Hara. It's not coming from the Yetzer Tov. And I caution, whatever poskim people are following, and there are differences of opinion sometimes amongst the poskim, that's okay. But one has to be so careful. One has to be so absolutely careful that he's following some posek. There are poskim out there who say you can have a minyan right now with 10 people, but they say you must wear a mask. They say you must socially distance. There are different ways that we're doing the davening. Aliyos are maybe not given out. One person gets all the aliyos. Only one person standing by the bima. That person does otzah and achnosa. He does hagbun galila. He lanes and gets all the aliyos. What's the hector to go back to the way that was normal? There's no posek that says you can do that. There's no posek that says you should have shalish shudis and shul right now. It's dangerous. That's the overriding principle. We're going to look at vaccines. Can you give a vaccine to somebody as a trial? Can you give an experimental medication? Those are shailas that have to be asked. There is no shaila whatsoever that you're not allowed to put yourself in a socket, in a matzah that's a sofik sakana. There is no posek. There are some poskim that have gone even so far to say that we should be machmir and sofik because of the extreme that we shouldn't open up anything to Rosh Hashanah. That's the Brisker Rav's derech. He was machmir like anything for pikuach nefashos. They once came to him, the famous story. He mattered something to be done for somebody on Shabbos, to be mechal Shabbos to save them. And somebody says, oh, Brisker Rav, you're a mikkel in Hilcha Shabbos. He said, no, I'm a machmir in pikuach nefashos. And it's so critical that people have to understand we're not out of the woods. And I don't know how to make that any clearer. All the poskim, b'li shum exception, not one less man the piggy. Every posek says we have to be maximizing on piguach nefashos, just where you draw the line. But it has to be with the advice of medical experts. I don't know any medical expert, not one infectious disease doctor would tell you to go to shul and have a shalash shudis in shul at this point in time, where by definition you can't wear a mask. By definition, people in shul are sharing and touching things together. That is absolute pikuach nefashos. I hope people get this message, because anybody who wasn't working in a hospital, you really have no idea what this magefa did. I'll give you just my hospital as an example, Mount Sinai, South Nassau. We're a nice-sized, Baruch Hashem, good tertiary hospital. On our highest day, a month and a half ago, not 6 years ago, 6 weeks ago, we had 500 patients in our hospital, which is more than our normal capacity. We had 400 of them COVID-positive patients. We'd stopped doing any elective surgery. We stopped doing anything that wasn't an emergency. The only thing we were dealing with, essentially, was births and COVID. And every now and then, somebody with a heart attack, somebody with some acute abdomen, some additional acute medical problem that could not be pushed aside. 100 patients were on a ventilator, almost all COVID. That was overwhelming. Our nice-sized hospital, we were using staff from every place in the hospital to take care of patients. That was 6 weeks ago. We could easily, within a span of several weeks, rahmana litzlan, go back to that situation. So it's critically important that everybody realize that this wasn't just one hospital. This was every hospital in New York. At New York Presbyterian System, they were using one ventilator on more than one patient. Roy Steinberg touched upon that in his shiur. That is medically something that we would never, ever do, except b'shas hadchak, under the most extenuating circumstances. That's something that is potentially very dangerous. The halach is about the Rav Shechter Shlita wrote a whole tshuva about that. That is something that we don't want to ever be in a situation. We have to decide that we're going to compromise potentially one patient so we can have another patient on the same respirator. These are the shailas that are going to come up again, rachmana litzlan, if we're not careful. But b'ezras Hashem, if we are careful, if we do what we're supposed to do, we can hopefully prevent this from spreading further. And that is going to be totally, to a certain extent, obviously everything is totally on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but totally to an extent on our ability to create new medicines and vaccines. So I'll talk first about the vaccines. We have to understand the medicine behind the vaccines at this point in time. We have, in a span of 100 days, a few short months, we've gone from not knowing anything about COVID-19, it didn't exist till late December as far as we know, to the point that we now have already multiple vaccines, candidate vaccines, that have been tried in human beings, actually tried in human beings. At least three that I know of have shown preliminary success in generating antibodies in those patients that are the equivalent of the antibody levels that are found in patients who have had COVID and Baruch Hashem survived. So these vaccines, in very small numbers of human patients, have already been shown to demonstrate that they can cause antibodies to be formulated in the bodies of those human beings. The questions remain, are those protective antibodies? Will they, in fact, prevent somebody from getting sick if they're exposed to COVID? That has not been studied yet and not been proven yet. And how safe are they? That's also certainly not been proven yet. And before we can discuss the halacha, we have to understand what's involved in creating a vaccine. So through technology today, we can, in a much faster period of time than previously, it normally takes about 11 to 12 years to develop a vaccine. Even the Ebola vaccines, which are more recent, it took 4 or 5 years to really develop an Ebola vaccine. And we don't have Ebola vaccines that are really successful and work against all different strains of Ebola. But we do know that in this short period of time with COVID-19, we have developed candidate vaccines that when injected into a healthy person, we're able to show that you can generate antibodies in that person. So the first halachic question is, are you allowed to do this? Are you allowed to make such vaccines? Are you tampering with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world? So that's an easy answer. The answer is absolutely yes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go out to the world to give shua. We have the halachic right to go and develop vaccines. We have the halachic right to do technology. So that's an easy question. All the posts can agree to that. There is an interesting Ramban that says that we really don't rely upon medicine. We should rely upon a Navi, a Kodesh Baruch Hu, in terms of everything. We don't paskin that Ramban Lamaisa, and Halacha Lamaisa, you're mechuyev to go to the doctor, you're mechuyev to go and take medications and not rely upon a Kodesh Baruch Hu to heal you. In fact, somebody who does so is, in fact, an Avarian. He's being over, Losamar Lodam Riecha, which includes your own blood. You're not allowed to ignore medicine today and rely upon just tefillah. Of course we do tefillah. Of course we do our ishtabas, you go to a rav for a bracha. Also brought down in Shulchan Aruch. But halacha lemaisa, we have to try. So that's easy. We're allowed to develop vaccines. Are you allowed to be the candidate to test it on? Can a person volunteer to say, sure, inject this vaccine into my arm and let's see what happens? So again, we have principles in halacha that we have to follow. And there actually, here is a situation where the secular principles and halachic principles are almost identical. I haven't really found any differences between them of significance. And the secular principles are laid out well in any IRB study to make sure that the principle of overriding principle is that we protect the people that we're doing experimentation on. They have to be done in a way that is safe, in a way that's not going to be damaging to them, sometimes in a way that they personally get benefit, sometimes in a way that society gets benefit. And those are all halachic principles as well. In halacha, a person is permitted. Anyway, Steinberg in some of his slides discussed that. I won't go over some of those papers. There are many, many Gemaras and other sources that discuss, is a person allowed to put himself at risk? He actually gave a lecture at the start of the COVID-19 crisis in January in my shul on this, because unfortunately I did have an inkling that this would be something that would be coming to the United States and would be a problem. I didn't have an inkling that it would be the way it was. I'm not a Navi, but I wish we had known more about this originally, then we maybe would have been able to treat it and face it better. But this is a problem for healthcare workers to put themselves at risk. Rabbi Steinberg talked a little bit about that. So certainly there are Gemaras that say that a person has the halachic right to put himself at a minimal risk to save somebody else's life. And the same type of halachic approach can be applied to vaccine candidates, to a person to become a volunteer in those studies. As long as it's not clearly something that's dangerous, which again, no IRB would allow a person to take a vaccine as a candidate vaccine if it was significantly dangerous. It's always unknown. It could be side effects, idiosyncratic reactions, unusual reactions for whatever the reason for that individual. things that aren't known. Halacha allows a person reasonable risk in this situation. And when these test vaccines are given to people, the overwhelming likelihood is that no definitive harm will come to the person. There's always a risk. It never guarantees. But they wouldn't be trying them on a human being from a secular, ethical IRB point of view if there wasn't a reasonable expectation that no harm will come to the person with no guarantees. And even if there's no guarantee that there'll be benefit, but it's part of the scientific process, a person has the right halachically to volunteer to be in such a vaccine trial. Certainly, there's absolutely no chiyuv for any individual to go and volunteer. And obviously, halacha would expect that the person with the least risk would be the ones that they would do the initial studies on. With COVID-19, we know that increasing age, unfortunately, increases risk. Until a few weeks ago, we used to think that children were essentially, Baruch Hashem, free of risk from COVID. They get mild illness. Now, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu laughs at us every now and then and says, you really think you know what's going on? And he shows us that we now have this post-inflammatory syndrome, this Kawasaki-like syndrome that we've seen in about 165 or so pediatric cases. So we learn new things every day. But certainly the expectation would be that if you're going to do a vaccine trial and you're looking to first see antibody response, you would do it in healthy, younger people. You wouldn't give this at this point in time to 80-year-olds, 90-year-olds. Although at some point in time, we will obviously have to give it to them if we do think it's going to be beneficial. But we need to do first a lot of homework in the younger population to prove that it's safe and effective in terms of producing antibodies, not necessarily effective in preventing disease. That's the next stage. But at the beginning, halacha would certainly allow a person to enter into what would be considered by the authorities, the secular authorities, is a legitimate good trial with all the safeguards in place, all the homework done to suggest that it should be a safe and effective type of procedure, so that halacha would in fact allow that, but not be mechayev any person to go and do that. In terms of the next steps, that's becoming hopefully lemaisa, probably in June, certainly by July, we should have phase three trials on the way for some of these vaccine candidates. There are about 100 different companies in candidate vaccines, which is very good because we wouldn't want to put all our eggs in one basket. We wouldn't want to make sure that we would want to make sure that there'll be multiple opportunities in case a vaccine looks good, and then has some toxicity. We don't want to put all the money and effort into one vaccine. So it'd be wonderful to have multiple candidate vaccines. In the United States, there are trials in Oxford, also co-sponsored with the United States, in Germany, in China. There are a number of excellent, already somewhat advanced vaccine trials that are underway. And we're up to the next steps, which is at some point in time, we'll actually expose people to COVID-19 and see what happens. And that is obviously a much more pronounced halachic shaila than giving somebody a test vaccine and just looking to see if it's dangerous. Those, Baruch Hashem, we know the expectation is that they're not going to be very dangerous with a rare idiosyncratic or allergic reaction. But now you're talking about in the next phases, you have to prove that they're efficacious outside of the laboratory. You can show neutralizing antibody is developed. Great. But that does that translate to meaning that if this person were to be exposed in real life to COVID-19, would they in fact get protection? And at some point in time, those studies will have to be done. So what does halacha say about that? So again, halacha allows a person to take a reasonable, minimal risk. Very hard to put it into an actual quantified number. Some have used the number of 10%. Very difficult in the post. The post can deal with generalities. They don't deal with specific numbers. But if the risk is considered a small enough risk and the benefit to that individual person, but even if it's just a benefit to society, is considered significant enough, so the poskim would say you are allowed to take such a risk. In Shulchan Aruch, it's brought down. In the Aruch HaShulchan, it's brought down. In Shulchan Aruch Harav, it's brought down. All agree that you have to put it in a balance scale. They talk about a peles, this balance scale. And all say that you are allowed, and in fact, they would recommend it, albeit not mechuyev to, take a small risk in order to save someone else's life. So, Lanias Dati, that translates to, if a person is willing to take that risk, and we would obviously do this initially in younger, healthier people, where the expectation would be that, Rahmana Litzlan, if the vaccine didn't work and they got COVID, they would have a relatively mild illness. And the studies do support that in the non-obese 20 to 30 to 40-year-old population who doesn't have underlying significant medical problems like immunocompromised situation or having severe cardiac or other specific problems, those patients would be a priori at a very low risk of running into serious problems with COVID. And Halacha would certainly suggest that they be the first people to actually be given, for example, an exposure to COVID and see, did their vaccine actually prevent them from getting COVID? That would be a next stage of vaccine development. And Halacha, Anias Dati, would allow that to occur in the best population possible for limiting the Rahman al-Islam potential complications if they got COVID. No guarantees. Nebuch, we've all seen younger patients that have Nebuch not survived. But Halacha would allow that. The next steps after that would be to roll out such a vaccine. Once it's, quote, FDA approved, once it has the authorization of the government. So certainly, Lanias Dati, that would allow, if the appropriate trials and information was available to suggest that it was safe, and even if it's not known how protective it is, certainly anybody would be allowed under halachic principles to take such a vaccine. I don't know if you'd be mechuyev to take such a vaccine until it's been proven to be effective, but halacha would allow somebody for their own personal benefit, and certainly for the additional benefit of herd immunity that would entail. So halacha would allow somebody to take such a vaccine once it became approved, or even if it wasn't approved, but in a larger trial where the expectation was it's not specifically dangerous, and we're not asking you to put yourself at risk, we're asking you in your normal life to know that you have had this vaccine, would that be beneficial and protective without necessarily putting you at specific risk? So then I think halacha would have no problems with that as well. Going from the vaccine to the treatment paradigms. So I'll give one example that I think is very important clinical example, and we can use some halachic principles to decide about taking experimental therapies. There was a tremendous amount of interest, and there still is a tremendous amount of interest in whether hydroxychloroquine, with or without azithromycin, is of any benefit in the treatment and possibly prevention of COVID-19. In the United States, this has become a political football and a hot potato, in that the President of the United States has stated that he's taking hydroxychloroquine as a protective measure, prophylactic medication to prevent him from getting COVID-19. So what does the halacha have to say about that? So how does halacha view experimental therapies? So essentially, it's exactly the same from a halachic point of view for vaccines as it is for experimental therapy. A person is allowed to decide, again, you're almost never mechuyev to take an experimental therapy, but halacha allows a person, based upon some of the gemaras that I alluded to beforehand, that Rabbi Steinberg had mentioned, that the poskim paskim halacha, a person is allowed to put themselves at some risk in order to get significant benefit for yourself or for somebody else. When you're taking your medication, you're mostly talking about the direct benefit to yourself. Of course, the spill-off benefit that you won't spread the disease to somebody else if you don't get it. So if hydroxychloroquine had any reasonable expectation that it might be of benefit, even though it might also have risks, so what would halacha say about taking it? So Lanias Dati, the halacha allows you to take such a medication. It certainly is not mechayev you. And from an infectious disease point of view, I would say that the data were very skimpy from the start. But many of us, myself included, did prescribe hydroxychloroquine because we were seeing patients dying in front of us left and right. We're seeing, Rahman al-Islam, our frum Haimisha communities devastated. There are many, many more deaths, Rahman al-Islam, in our communities than our population in the United States would have said if we just go on a straight population basis. Certainly earlier on, when we were having thousands Nebuchs of deaths in the frum community, when there are only 30, 40,000 deaths in the United States, and we're not 20%, 15, 10% of the population. This Nebuch came very hard in our communities. And therefore, from a halacha l'maisa point of view, as well as with the skimpy evidence that was available, many infectious disease doctors did prescribe hydroxychloroquine. Subsequently, we now, however, have data that the combination of hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, both of which can prolong the QT interval, that for those that aren't physicians don't understand what that means, it can increase your cardiac risk of having arrhythmias and toxicity. And now we know there are studies now out there to suggest that there is no benefit and there might even be risk from taking both hydroxychloroquine with or without azithromycin. So Lania's Dati at this point in time, for somebody with established disease, I would think that it's usher at this point in time to take hydroxychloroquine outside of a study setting, because we do have evidence that it's dangerous. We have no evidence in that population. Again, the population of people that have had symptoms for a number of days and are being admitted to the hospital. I think at this point, there's enough suggestion that it's dangerous and that there is no suggestion that it's beneficial in that group based upon a couple of studies. So Lania's Dati, one should not be taking that outside of a study setting. Within a study setting, it's still a reasonable premise that it might be beneficial. And within a study setting, it can be condoned, albeit certainly not obligated in any way, shape, or form. What is still unknown about something like hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin is, would it have any benefit if one took it at the onset of symptoms? Now, people have to realize at the onset of symptoms, you probably have viremia already for several days. We now understand the pathophysiology of this virus and how it affects us. And you probably have several days, if not even 4 or 5 days, where a person has significant levels of viremia, and therefore they're actually contagious during this period of time. And when you start getting symptoms, it's not sure at that point in time whether any treatment will actually be beneficial. Although we do have some evidence that some medications do work in that setting. So does hydroxychloroquine, with or without azithromycin, work in that setting remains unknown. Lania's Dati, based upon the medical information that's out there at this point in time, I don't think it's usher to take it in that situation, but I wouldn't recommend it anymore in that situation. And the only way I would recommend that somebody be on that medication, either one or two, would be in a study setting. And there are several studies underway, and we'll hopefully, Yezus Hashem, find out those results in the near future. And Lania's Dati, that's the appropriate usage from a medical and halachic point of view. There isn't enough evidence to suggest that they're beneficial at this point in time. In that situation, there isn't enough evidence to suggest that they're dangerous. So it becomes a halachic toss-up, a medical toss-up. And therefore, in those situations when something is a medical toss-up, I err on the side of being machmir and pikuach nefashos. And I don't recommend taking a dangerous medication. There are potential dangers in giving it. We would want to give it to the sickest of potential patients, the older groups, the patients that have underlying illnesses. And that's where the QT interval concerns would be the greatest. And in an outpatient setting, it's hard to get daily EKGs. It's hard to follow patients very well. So Lania's Dati, I don't think the medicine recommends it. And therefore, I don't think halacha would recommend that you take it, albeit halacha would not say it's usher in that setting. My recommendation, both from a medical halacha basis, would be to wait until we know what the clinical trials say or to enter into a clinical trial. In that vein, we have the antiviral agent remdesivir. And just Friday night, the New England Journal of Medicine published the paper that the NIH had discussed and the data exactly what the NIH put out, that remdesivir does have some benefit. So here we now have the first, well, not FDA approved yet, we have the first FDA authorized medication, and we have it in the hospital. We've been giving it through experimental usage, and now we can give it through what's called emergency authorization usage in the United States. And hospitals that have high numbers of COVID patients have gotten drug. We've gotten drug from the government, and we've been giving it both in an experimental study setting as well now in a authorized usage form from the FDA. And I'm sure Canada and other places have similar protocols in place, because we now know that it does have some benefit. Good protocols have shown that remdesivir is somewhat effective. Certainly not a panacea, certainly not a cure-all. We don't know yet the optimal way to use it, but certainly it does decrease the length of stay. And there's a trend, albeit not statistically significant, that it lowers mortality from 11% to 8% in this one study. Other studies have not shown it to be that effective, but all have suggested that there is some benefit to it. And now the halachic question is, who should get it? You have a limited amount. So what we have done is set up protocols in the hospital to give out that drug to the people that we think would have benefit from it. But we haven't restricted it based upon age. We haven't restricted it based upon other factors other than toxicity. If people have severely compromised renal function or liver function, so then we don't give it to them because we think it's too dangerous. That's halachically consistent with the medical fact. We don't want to give somebody too dangerous a therapy. But the question would be is, can you restrict it? You have a limited number of doses, So this applies the triage principles that Rabbi Steinberg spoke about, so I won't go into them as well. But if you have an unlimited supply of the drug, so then we wouldn't be restricting it in any way. With the limited supply that we have, we're trying to give it to the patients that we feel will benefit the most. In other words, patients that have reached a certain level of severity based upon their oxygen saturation being less than 94%, and not giving it to the routine patients who have, Baruch Hashem, good oxygen saturations. And I think that makes good medical sense because we don't know that they need remdesivir, and it does have potential toxicity. And this way we can reserve the drug, like we do many drugs in medicine, for patients that we think will benefit from it the most without ruining it, so to say, using it up by giving it to patients that really don't need it. I think that's consistent with halachic principles, and it's certainly consistent with the medical utilization. The other drug that I'll talk about in the 1 or 2 minutes that I have left is plasma therapy. Plasma therapy entails many, many shilas. When plasma therapy first was discussed, it was the year probably 1900. And the first Nobel Prize in medicine was actually won for the concept of plasma therapy, giving people antibodies passively. And that concept is a good concept. It hasn't been used that much in recent years, except after exposure to certain viruses like measles or other viruses where we give gamma globulin, hyperimmune gamma globulin, to those patients. And now we're trying this again. I'll say that some studies that we're doing at Mount Sinai do show some significant benefit from plasma therapy. They're about to be published now, and we're looking at a much larger group. Our own personal experience with 100 patients does suggest that it does have some benefit, but it's too early to say exactly who should get it and when they should get it. Leaving that aside, some of the interesting halachic shilas that came up with plasma therapy were, when we didn't have enough of it, it's only made from human beings. So when we first came up with this idea of giving plasma therapy, the question was, could somebody donate or be tested on Shabbos or Yom Tov? This was around Pesach time. And Poskim came out that a person could actually get tested on Yom Tov and donate, drive on Yom Tov to get to donate plasma because it was a life-saving potential therapy. Lanias Dati, I don't think some of those Poskim that came out with those Psak were familiar enough with the medical side. From a theoretical point of view, the Psak was right. But unfortunately, I think from a medical point of view, they weren't given the correct facts. I don't think there ever was a situation where we needed to have somebody be Michal Shabbos or Michal Yontif to give plasma therapy because there were enough donors lined up that there were 2 or 3 week waiting lists. So why somebody should have to go in on Shabbos or Yontif when there were plenty of other people that could go in on Shabbos or Yontif? I don't think that was made clear to the Poskim who came out with such Piskei Halacha. But at least in theory, I'm not arguing with the Psak Halacha. I think the facts weren't presented to them. And as with all things, if the facts aren't presented to the Poskim correctly, so then the Poskim will not come up with the right answer. I don't think it's necessary, certainly at this point in time, for somebody that's told that they have a high antibody level to run out on Shabbos morning, go to the local blood center, have their blood donated on Shabbos to get plasma. Because Baruch Hashem, we have enough plasma right now. We can wait till Sunday, can wait till Monday. They're not working at night. If this was so essential, they'd be working 24-7. They're not working 24-7. There is, Baruch Hashem, enough plasma. We need more. Nobody should get the impression that we shouldn't donate. It's a wonderful chesed. It's a wonderful mitzvah to donate, but it's not Doche Shabbos. We don't need that emergency sense that it would be Doche Shabbos. In theory, it is Doche Shabbos, but in practical, the mitzvahs don't make it that one should be donating on Shabbos. Certainly to receive it on Shabbos is Pikuach Nefashos, and anybody in the hospital or anybody needing it is absolutely Doche Shabbos. It does have enough of a suggestion that it's I wouldn't say it's Beduka Menusa like the Rambam in the Pirush Mishnayos and Yuma talks about that at best they have to do Beduka Menusa in order to give it on Shabbos. But I think it reaches the level that we have enough information at this point in time that it might be beneficial that one could take it on Shabbos and wouldn't be over Chilul Shabbos. I think there's enough evidence to suggest that it is something that could be life-saving, and we don't know if starting it after Shabbos would make a difference. The earlier we give it, theoretically, the better. So therefore, I think giving this type of a medication would be Doche Shabbos at this point in time. So I've run out of my 45 minutes, which I was entitled to. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be here. And I'm happy. I haven't had a chance to look at the chat. So Laser, who does such a beautiful job always putting these conferences together with Rabbi Jay, I thank you both for inviting me again. And I look forward to trying to answer any questions that I can.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Glatz. As expected, Rabbi Glatt, you have lots of questions. And of course, we have a limited amount of time. I will try again to put them together. I'll be succinct in the questions, and hopefully we'll be able to get through as many as possible. Some of them are enormous quagmires that can probably we could spend the afternoon discussing. One question I'd like to open with is, in an era of vaccine fear and general, there's always a fear of collusion. How are we going to address the ethics and the social issues with regards to fast tracking these vaccines that normally take multiple years to develop, and suddenly we are faced with a vaccine potential in such a short period of time? How will we be able to speak to our communities and skeptics?
So we've had this discussion probably at every single conference about the value of vaccinations. So the medical opinion is how we should make up our halachic status. And many, many poskim will tell you that certain vaccinations are a chiyuv. And even if they don't say it's a chiyuv, they strongly recommend them. It is nonsense. Some of the vaccine propaganda out there from the anti-vaxxers, it's just not medically correct. I don't know why certain things persist. There's this a concern that there's this conspiracy amongst doctors. Again, I haven't been getting my check. So if all the conspirators out there know where the checks should be coming to, please send them to me, because I've never gotten a penny from any of the vaccine manufacturers or from the government. Vaccines are safe and effective. They're not all perfect. They have risks. Nobody's ever said that they don't. The benefit of vaccinations has clearly been proven scientifically. For those that don't want to believe that, I will never convince them. For those that wish to believe it, they have to look at the hard data. They have to look at all the professional societies. So I won't get into a diatribe here against anti-vaxxers. Not my goal ever. I don't like to attack other people or fight with other people. I present the medical information. Baruch Hashem, when we, Be'ezus Hashem, develop a vaccine, hopefully v'mehera b'yameinu, very soon, so then I would certainly recommend, if it's a safe vaccine, that everybody take it. The beauty here is that we don't need, like with measles, the same level of herd immunity to benefit. Measles is far more contagious, maybe 10 times more contagious than COVID. If you were in a room with somebody having measles, in a room, a conference room, and nobody in the room had antibody to measles, nobody ever had exposure to measles, the vast majority of the people after that hour lecture would develop measles, probably 90%. That's how contagious measles is in a room. If you had that same room with COVID, you wouldn't have as many people getting infection. Now, that's not to say that we want to leave populations uncovered. But if the majority of the people take COVID, it will probably be much more effective in preventing spread than it would be the same amount of people took measles in preventing spread, because measles is more contagious. Bottom line, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, God is kind to us and allows us to develop a good, safe vaccine. I would highly recommend that everybody take it. Those that wish to listen will be Yirtzeh Hashem benefit. Those that don't wish to listen will be putting themselves at risk of getting COVID. I can't tell people what to do. I can only present to them the medical facts, and Be'ezus Hashem, they'll listen to the medical facts, which is what halacha demands. Halacha demands that we listen to the medical facts. Halacha doesn't say ignore the mumcha. People who ignore the mumcha are going against halacha. Sometimes halacha doesn't demand that you do it, so you're not over in aveira, but you're not doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do, which is to follow the mumcha, as outlined clearly in the sources and in Shulchan Aruch. And Shabbos, you're not allowed to go against what the mumcha says. If the mumcha says you got to be mechal Shabbos, you can't say, I'm going to trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't believe the mumcha. That's keneged halacha. So I would suggest, if it's a pikuach nefasha situation, and Nebuch COVID is running rampant again, Rachmana Litzlan, and a vaccine is available, Lanias Dati would be a chiyuv to take it in that setting.
Rabbi Glatt, a lot of has been discussed with regards to hydroxychloroquine in particular, but the situation that comes up is the physician follows the medical protocols, but the patient insists on still being prescribed that medication. Can you speak to that challenge and that responsibility in both directions? There are many other questions, so I mean, if you want to just triage that.
I'll try to go through them quickly and get to as many as we can. Lanias Dati, any physician that lets a patient talk him into doing something is wrong, is a lousy physician. Physicians need to talk with their patients. They need to have good conversations with their patients. But no physician should ever do something that they think is wrong because the patient asks for it. Straightforward and simple. If you do not think there's any benefit to hydroxychloroquine, which is my opinion right now, for somebody coming into the hospital, we originally recommended it. I took it off our recommendation list and put it on our not recommended list in the hospital. If you're so sick already for a couple of days that you need to come into the hospital, I doubt that hydroxychloroquine will have any benefit. And I think it will be toxic to you. And no matter how much a patient pressured me to take it, I would say, I'm sorry. If you want somebody to prescribe it to you, you're going to need to find another doctor. I will not do something that I think is wrong because a patient demands it.
Along a similar line, if the use of hydroxychloroquine, even if used properly or within the guidelines, has a secondary negative consequence, which means it will be limited now to patients for their rheumatoid arthritis, their Sjogren's, and other type of conditions. How does one approach that?
So again, I think from a medical point of view, thank God, I do think there's enough hydroxychloroquine right now because most physicians are no longer prescribing it. So Baruch Hashem, that question is moot at this point in time. I don't think there are shortages right now of hydroxychloroquine. Originally, where every single person in the world was suddenly on hydroxychloroquine, yeah, this would be a terrible tragedy for people that have rheumatoid arthritis, that have other rheumatoid-type illnesses, autoimmune illnesses, lupus, etc. So it would be terrible if people were taking a drug inappropriately and they couldn't get their drug appropriately. But this, again, becomes a triage type of a shaila that Rabbi Steinberg addressed, and that is if you have a limited resource of something, you have to figure out halachically acceptable ways to take it and to give it. So it would fall under that rubric.
Okay, thank you. Rabbi Glatt, are there specific examples of reinfection with specific strain of virus and having neutralizing antibodies?
We're talking about COVID or in general?
COVID.
So with COVID, Korean CDC, I'm embarrassed to say that the Korean CDC has done a tremendous amount of good work publishing stuff that maybe we could learn some lessons from. And they just published a paper, I think last Wednesday, which I read in detail, which is a phenomenal paper looking at what was called the positives that became negatives that became re-positives. And they looked at all of these patients and they did extensive studies on them. And they clearly showed that not one of these was a new COVID infection and that not one of these reinfections led to a secondary case of infection. So therefore, these reinfections represent our lack of having great testing. And a negative test in a series over time, and then having a positive test thereafterwards does not represent new infection, but represents the limits of the test. Each test is a separate test with its own sensitivity and specificity. It's probably also going to be observer dependent, or the person, the intervention dependent who did the sample. Did they really stick it in the nasopharyngeal? Was it really nasal? Was it a good specimen obtainment? Was it processed properly? Did the laboratory take care of it properly? There's so many variables that a negative doesn't mean it's an absolute negative and the person's ice COVID and now they get a new episode of COVID a week later. And they clearly show that that's not the case. Answering the second part of your question that you alluded to, what about neutralizing antibody? So in some papers actually done this week published from the Sinai study group in our system, so they showed 100% of patients, even with mild COVID, have generated antibodies. You can't always show this on a simple test, but when you do exhaustive testing, essentially 100% of patients exposed to COVID develop antibodies, different levels of antibody, but a level of antibody at this point definitely demonstrates that you had COVID. And in test tubes, this type of antibody production has been shown to be neutralizing antibody, which is very good, very positive. There are two immunological studies done in the last week that show that you actually can generate helper T cells that theoretically should give you immunity. This is still unproven, but strongly suggestive that in the immediate time period after COVID, a person is not going to get COVID again, and a person is not going to probably be able to transmit COVID even if they're exposed to it. But that still is not proven. And I tell people who have a legitimate antibody, you have to know, the FDA just yesterday took 30 tests off the market in the United States. I don't know the situation in Canada. They took 30 tests off the market because they were garbage. And the likelihood, if you were told you had a positive from those tests, more likely to be a false positive. So people that go around and say, I have antibody, I'm Superman, I can do whatever I want, they may be deadly wrong. And I say that very seriously. They think they have antibody, they think they're immune, and they could, Rahman al-Islam, be typhoid Mary. They could get it themselves and transmit it to everybody else. So only a good antibody test done correctly with a specificity of close to 100% is of any value. And those people will probably not get COVID again in the near future. But I don't know what that will mean in the summer. I certainly don't know what that will mean in the fall or the winter. Will it be protected? At this point in time, no person in the world has developed COVID a second time. That's all we know. Mi'etz Hashem, that should continue to be true. And then we'll know a lot more as we develop these neutralizing antibodies further. And we can see that they're actually protective and not just markers of infection.
So Rabbi Glatt, we have time for one last question, which you can probably speak to this for the next hour, but people will then, we know we're going to end in a couple of minutes, but we always leave you with the difficult question. You have the podium, you have the audience. What would you recommend now as a realistic a policy for reopening shuls? There seems to be lots of discussion and the subset of this question is, when there are communities that are doing their own thing, what is the responsibility of the medical / halachic community? Do we go about having to police them as not? You have the podium, you have 3 minutes. What should we be looking at?
Okay, so it's a great question. I would say I'm asked that question 5 times an hour in emails and calls. It is a very important question. So the underlying principle that people don't realize, there is unanimity amongst the poskim. Despite there's a slightly different the guideline versus the OURCA guideline versus other communities that publish guidelines, there is one common denominator, the tzad ha-shav behem. All agree you can't do something without severe restrictions and curtailment on normal ways of doing business. Whether you say you should open the shuls up today or wait 2 weeks, that's a machlokis in pikuach nefashos. Eluv eluv divel kim chayim. But it's critically important to understand whoever is opening up a shul anywhere, if you don't do it under the strictest supervision and guidance of the medical professionals to make it as safe as possible, you never are going to be killing people, rachmana litzlan, potentially. The only way it won't happen is if there's zero COVID around. No community that I know has zero COVID around if they've had COVID recently. The Baruch Hashem, the numbers in New York, we were the epicenter of the world. The numbers in New York and Long Island have Baruch Hashem gone down, but every day, every hospital in our area is still seeing new cases. And people talk about, well, it's not in our communities, not our Haimisha communities, Baruch Hashem. That's not true. It still is. Albeit Baruch Hashem, very, very, very low. We have to understand how rapidly, remember back to Purim, we have such short communal memories. Arthur Turetsky, Olav HaShalom. So he went into the hospital on Purim. He got his infection probably a week or two before. He got it probably not from work. He got it from being a good yid, going to shul, from going to smachot, going to levayis. He got it from doing everything that we were supposed to do. And if we go back to just doing everything that we want to do without guidelines, whichever guidelines you want to follow, but guidelines restricting numbers of people, making sure that people are far apart, doing Kriyas HaTorah differently, doing weddings differently, doing levayas differently. If we don't gradually increase and look carefully for any uptick, I look at all the hospitals in New York City and Nassau County every day. I'm part of a collaborative. We look at all the numbers. If somebody has an uptick, we'll know about it. It'll be a few days late. We don't know that because we know the hospital admissions. That's already 2 to 14 days after the exposures. So we watch this very carefully. I know the data in my hospital. I know every case coming into my hospital. If we watch that carefully, and as we open up a little bit, let's see what happens. We now have minyanim. Let's see what happens. Places that have been minyanim already. Let's see what happens. Let's open up a little bit more. Let's see what happens. If we do this carefully in a very scientific, halachically required manner, then Be'ezras Hashem, we can limit, minimize, or detect Rachmana Lislan if it does become a problem and shut it down right away. Somebody asked me a question. When should we shut it down? I said, in the mitten de Shmoneh Esrei. If I tell you that there's a shooter coming in there right now, you can say, no, I have to finish Shmoneh Esrei. We're going to daven Maariv after Mincha. And then we'll stop it. There's a shooter in the room. You got to stop it immediately. COVID is a shooter in the room. If we see there's an uptick, we have to cut back, stop everything. And Be'ezras Hashem, there won't be an uptick if we do this carefully. And we can expand from 10 people to 20 people. And we can expand to have maybe more of a smachot in our families, in our communities, in a very limited way. We're not going to go back to weddings like we had them in a for a long period of time. People talking to me, asking me about, what about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? So I doubt that Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur are going to look like Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur in the past. I don't think that any smachot that we have are going to look like they were in the past for a long period of time. When, B'ezras Hashem, we eliminate COVID through a vaccine, through HaKadosh Baruch Hu's grace, through a medication that can be easily be taken and stop it from becoming serious, only then we'll be able to get back to the life as we knew it beforehand. But for now, I just don't see that happening right away, and therefore we have to be so careful. Again, Rav Twersky Shlita, one of the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, wrote a tshuva. He says you shouldn't open up anything to Rosh Hashanah. That's the machmir brisker position from his Elta Zeda, the brisker Rav. Not everybody holds from that. But that's an opinion that shouldn't be ignored in terms of hashkafa. The answer is Hashem, we should all be safe, Laser. Everybody should follow what the medical experts say, which is forming the basis for the poskei halacha, the gedolim, to say. And if we do that, we're doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do. And in that zechus, by doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, not what we want. We all want to go to Minyan. We all want to go to Kiddush. That's what we want, but that's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. If we do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, Be'ezras Hashem, we'll see the end of this machal of B'mehar V'yameinu.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Rabbi Glatt, for a wonderful talk. And we thank all the speakers this morning. For the audience in general, we are going to shut the video now, and we would ask you to log in again at 1:45 for the continuation of the conference. Enjoy lunch, and we'll see you all later.
Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.